First of all, congratulations to the Boston Celtics defeating the Los Angeles Lakers, NBA champs. Congratulations, Boston Celtics. Loch Ness Monster, always, since I was a kid, have been fascinated with this creature that is out there in Scotland. And then what about Bigfoot and some other mysteries of the world? Lee Frank joins us in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, this hour, we're going to talk about Loch Ness. Next hour, Bigfoot and some other creatures with Lee Frank. He's been on three expeditions in search of the Loch Ness Monster. He worked for the Loch Ness Investigation Bureau, which maintained surface observation posts along Loch Ness. And later, he was a field monitor and chief diver with the MIT-based Academy of Applied Science. Now, this is the team which obtained the very famous Flipper photo in 1972, an underwater photo of the head and torso. Lee Frank has also investigated Bigfoot sightings in British Columbia, New Jersey, and Tennessee. And through the help of Betty Hill, he has also explored the Bigfoot UFO connection. Here he is, Lee Frank. Hey, Lee, how are you?
Good evening, George. How are you doing?
Good. I'm looking forward to this.
We're going to have some fun.
And so are so many other people. They just love this subject matter. Let's talk about this underwater photo. I remember this. This is the one I saw in National Geographic a long time ago.
It actually got quite a bit of press, really, around the world. It seemed to be the first corroborating piece of evidence since same time that the photo was taken, there was a sonar tracking of what independent sonar experts said were two large inanimate objects in the order of 30 to 40 feet in length. And exactly 1:48 in the morning of August 8th, 1972, the camera went off and photographed what looks like a flipper, some sort of appendage. Measures about 6 feet by 8 feet, give you an idea of the size of the critter it's attached to. It was not the best experiment, as it turns out. And over the years, people have refuted it. And I'm familiar with that, what happened that evening. And I wish that in the intervening years, I was as convinced as I was at that time. I think that as great as the evidence that presented, there are a number of problems with it. The Academy presented this photo that you saw in National mm-hmm. Geographic that was actually retouched, and they didn't say so. They said that it was computer enhanced. And there's a little bit of difference, and I know what came from the camera that night, and it just doesn't look as perfect as that flipper photo does, sadly to say.
Well, it's got to be something, though. It is an incredible photograph.
It is an incredible photograph, but if you were to see what our cameras photographed that night, it's really less impressive.
Yeah.
What happened was it was run through a computer at mm-hmm. JPL. There was a gentleman there who was kind of doing this thing on the side. At that point, there were two computers in the world capable of analyzing photographs and correcting for the light, exposing the grain, and just clarifying the picture. But along the way, a newspaper had or a magazine, actually, had retouched it. And the Academy then said that that was the photograph that we had taken. And it really was not true. We were kind of lucky to have scientists doing research in Scotland. However, you know, looking back on it, they were kind of inept.
Huh. Lee, let's talk about the loch, if we can, in Scotland. Can you describe it for us?
It's a very narrow, very long body of water. It's about 22 miles long, about a mile and a half wide, although at the northern tip, there's an area called, I'm sorry, the southern tip, an area called Loch Dock 4, which is about 2.5 miles long, and the animals have access to that as well. So it's a body of water roughly the size of Manhattan. It's extremely deep. It was carved out in the Ice Age. We had always thought that it was connected to the sea, and whatever large predators were living in the ocean were coming inland, mm-hmm. and they got trapped as the water receded and land came up. However, recent scientific research at Locke has shown that it really was not part of the sea at the time of the last ice age. So whatever is in the Locke has been there for a long, long time. And we're not talking about one animal. I mean, we're clearly talking about a breeding species of animals. These animals have been seen in about 78 lakes around the world, uniformly deep freshwater lakes. Although, actually, that's not true. Some of the fjords, some of the lochs in Ireland are connected to the sea. They've been seen in Lake Okanagan, British Columbia,
right.
Lake Varorta, Siberia.
Now, in the loch, it's pretty murky, isn't it?
Color of a tea. It's peat stains that kept in perpetual suspension by all the rivers, eight main ones, leading down from the hills. And you can't see as far as the end of your arm. And no amount of light really increases your visibility because of the actual particles suspended in the water. It's like using your high beams in a snowstorm.
I hate to go scuba diving in water like that.
It's no place to go for a person with a good imagination.
No, and then you feel some kind of creature bump against you. Yeah, I don't want that.
We had our cameras were set to trigger, and our lights were set to go off when anything the size of a subway came within 60 feet. I was doing a routine dive on this station. I heard the cameras begin to whir. I saw those lights flash on. I didn't see anything. All I can tell you is I did an impression of a Polaris missile. I got out of the water so fast. And it's really, it's a very odd place to go scuba diving because people who dive know that it's kind of sensory deprivation. You're weightless. And when the water is this pitch brown color, you can't tell up from down. I went down with a diver from the North Sea oil rigs, and we followed a lifeline down, and I kind of lost track of him, and I felt around for him, and I lost track of the lifeline, and I said, well, I'll just go up to the surface. And I noticed my bubbles were moving down in a diagonal downward direction, and I looked at them, and I know the laws of physics tell me that bubbles through water go up, and I just realized I was completely disoriented. I said, follow the bubbles. And to me, I was heading down, but eventually I hit the surface.
Yeah, that happens. Now, the monster itself, how far back in recorded history have we had sightings, Lee?
First recorded sighting was in 565. There was an Irish monk or a Celtic monk by the name of Saint Iona Saint Columbus from the Isle of Iona, who was coming down to do mercenary work. And he saw this great beast and commanded it to go away. And interestingly enough, he described the movement of the animal that has been described by eyewitnesses or good eyewitnesses ever since, which is the animal just submerged straight down. People would imagine with this long cylindrical neck and small head that it would kind of dive, but it doesn't. It seems to go straight down, and that's what people see when they see this animal. They usually this sighting is of a hump, and oddly enough, people report seeing the hump transform from one hump to two humps and sometimes three humps, indicating some sort of like flexible back, maybe an air sac back there. It's anybody's guess what it is. Sometimes they'll see and less frequently they'll see that long cylindrical telephone pole like neck with a small head perched on top.
And I've heard theories that an elephant troop, a circus troop, was in the area, and of course not in 565 A.D., and that an elephant got loose and was, you know, what you saw was the trunk sticking out of the water as the elephant was swimming his way across. Stephen Alton believes it could be a huge eel. A lot of different theories like that. And then, of course, there's the dinosaur, the plesiosaur theory, which is what I hope it is. I don't know why, but it sounds, I don't know. That's what I think Loch Ness should be, a dinosaur.
Well, you know, the tricky thing is that once you live there, you meet people who've seen it, and they've seen it close up. And they all describe the same thing, and it's not what you would imagine somebody would be describing. But number one, they are scared out of their minds when they see this thing. They describe a horse-like head with these bulging red eyes, which you kind of expect, horn-like appendages, and a kind of baleen mouth. I know a guy by the name of Jenkins who started up his tractor, stuck its head out of the log, and he said that he was terrified, but he got a very good look at it. And, again, this is what people see at these lakes around the world. You know, through recorded history, there have been sightings of sea serpents and an animal that seems to resemble this. And you're right. I mean, there are other ways to suppose what this thing could be. You know, a sturgeon with its tail sticking out could resemble that sort of, you know, head and neck. But when you talk to people who've seen it and they've watched it for 40 minutes, there is no mistaking in their mind what they've seen.
It's safe to assume there's something in the lock. I don't know what it is, but it's there.
People have seen something, yes. And I don't know what it is either. And, you know, I left Loch Ness in the mid-70s thinking that we had done so much research and we were on the verge of a major, major discovery. And since then, people have poked holes through a lot of the evidence. There's been a lot of debunking of evidence that I thought was really, really reliable that had been analyzed by the Royal Air Force and others. And we can go into the specifics of, you know, what those were, whether it was the surgeon's photo or the Dinsdale photo. But you can't disregard these eyewitness sightings. And there are just so many of them.
I was going to say, how many reports since 565 AD? How many do you think have come in?
Well, you know, they kind of came in dribs and drabs over the years until the 30s. And in the 30s, they built a road around the northern shore. And whether it was the dynamiting they were doing to cut through the cliffs or just the increased visibility, people started seeing this in great numbers. I mean, there have been hundreds and hundreds of sightings. How many of them are good? You know, you hear what people describe, and they're either making this up or they're hallucinating.
Assuming they're not making it up, that they're really seeing anything.
I'll go with that.
Have there been also reports of people out there with hoaxes? I mean, they've created an inflatable Loch Ness monster and they floated it. That has happened. Okay.
Oh, there was a guy there while I was there, a gentleman by the name of Frank Searle. And this guy was just coming up with photo after photo. And, you know, your listeners can see them on the web. I'm sure there's a way to find them. But just intuitively, you look at this thing, and you know no animal has perfect right angles the way his seemed to have.
Yeah.
And you could tell that they're just kind of floating there. They seem lifeless. In fact, I confronted him on that, and he became very, very upset about it. There was written about in a magazine, you know, when I suggested that he was hoaxing these things. Another guy, there's a shield, something called the Shields photograph, although among researchers we call it the Muppet picture, just because it's just so obviously a hoax. There's not great photographic evidence for this animal. Of the ones, the gray photograph, the McNabb photo is actually pretty good. That was taken in 55, and it shows an animal with some scale because it's right near Urquhart Castle.
Okay.
And we know the castle tower is 64 feet from top to bottom, and the animal seemed to be at least twice that size.
God, that's huge. Now, which is the photo of the neck sticking out through the water?
Yeah, that's the one that's fascinating. It's called the surgeon's photo. And it was taken by a gentleman who didn't want to have his name associated with it, a London surgeon by the name of Wilson, it later turns out. And a lot of analysis was done on that photo, again by the Royal Air Force, even so far as pointing out that a little behind it there was a swirl of water moving in the opposite direction, indicating whatever was underneath it was of a massive scale. And the one people are familiar with was actually one of two. So there was another one taken also, and there's a little bit of sequence. The problem with the photo was that we never saw the background. But if we accepted it as authentic, then it certainly showed an animal of apparently considerable size. And for years, it was the most impressive piece of evidence for this animal. And then it turns out a researcher by the name of Alistair Boyd in the 80s did some serious investigation and found a guy on his deathbed who said that he was part of the hoax, that this guy was actually a friend of a guy by the name of Marmaduke Weatherall. In the 30s, people actually took this very seriously, and they brought in a big game hunter by the name of Marmaduke Weatherall, who was caught forging. They found within days of his arrival. And again, people were taking this seriously.
Yeah.
The New York Zoological Society was going.
This was big stuff then.
It was huge stuff. It was kind of a diversion. The country was heading toward war. The world was heading toward war. And suddenly there were reports of these animals seen in Loch Ness, and people were taking it very seriously. They sent this big game hunter there, a newspaper in England, and within a short period he found tracks, and it turned out within a very short time that they were made from a hippopotamus foot, the kind commonly used for umbrella stands. So he was kind of tossed out of there, and, you know, to kind of do a little retaliation, he had his buddy submit these photos, which were made with clay on top of a toy submarine.
Oh, jeez.
And and it fooled everybody for the longest period of time. And interesting to me was the analysis that went into this. And it later turned out to be fake, but at the time, in the 70s, people weren't able to determine that by looking at it and studying it. Nobody said, look at this, is fake. We didn't have the background, which was unfortunate, but still. And the Dinsdale film was another piece of evidence that was later discredited. The overflowing bucket of proof for this animal has kind of diminished. However, you're still left, again, with these extraordinary sightings.
And we're going to talk about more of those extraordinary sightings when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll talk about Bigfoot with our guest, Lee Frank. But when we come back, more on the Loch Ness Monster on Coast to Coast AM. Lee, let's talk a little bit about, again, some of the people in the sightings. Weren't there some land-based sightings as well?
Yeah, there are just around 20 of them. The most famous is the Spicers incident in 1933, just outside of Dawes. They saw a couple, actually, driving down the highway. The roadway is hardly a highway. Saw what they described as a huge beast, like something we've never seen before, cross the road. Again, describing this kind of bulbous body, this long neck and small head, although they didn't see the head. It was obscured by the bushes. I had the opportunity to speak with Margaret Cameron, who was a young girl with a group of friends. At the time of World War I, watched one of them amble out of the bushes into the loch. She stood there with her sister and some friends, described as about 20 feet in length. For people who lived around the loch, it was a kind of acceptance that these animals lived there, although people associated it with bad luck. It was a water kelpie, and the kids' movie kind of, you know, makes all that seem very, very nice, but it was considered a sign of misfortune. And people held these stories to themselves. It's not like we would imagine that people would make this stuff up. When I was there in 73, I had known a woman for quite some time, and she pulled me aside one day and told me about watching this animal for about 40 minutes when she was a young girl. She was on top of a ledge, and she watched the thing seeming to sun itself, and she described the skin being rough like an elephant's hide with hair on it. And again, you know, people get very, very close up to this thing and describe it in great detail. And it's hard to say that that nothing is going on when you hear these stories. You know, what is going on? Again, it's open to great debate. There are all sorts of people who started out thinking that it's simply an unclassified species of animal or some animal that has wandered into law.
Mm-hmm.
Ted Holliday, F.W. Holliday, is one gentleman who wrote The Great Worm of Loch Ness, one of the early books on the subject, describing it from a scientific viewpoint. Let's discover what these unclassified species of animals are.
Could it be a huge seal, Lee?
You know, seal is unlikely. Otters, you know, I think maybe responsible for some of the sightings. Loch Ness is a very deep body of water, and the sides of it are very, very steep. And this creates a situation where wakes will bounce off the sides of the loch and return to the center. And you have this wake there that a boat has left, but you no longer see the boat. In the early 50s, John Cobb was a gentleman who was breaking the world speed record. And his speedboat required a mirror flat surface, and Loch Ness was perfect for that. He was about to become the fastest man on Earth when a ripple out of nowhere, and some suggest it was the animal, although it seems more likely that it was just one of these wakes from his own boat that reverberated off the side of the loch, came back, splintered his boat, and unfortunately the man died just because the boat was meant for that mirror flat surface, and as much as a ripple totally devastated his craft. And there's a memorial along the shores of the loch to Mr. Cobb.
Were there ever any reports of individuals missing, gobbled up, taken by this creature?
No. And all reports are the contrary, that when the animal hears noise, it shies away. It submerges. There's no signs of it. I mean, there are some stories about it actually, you know, grabbing some deer or sheep, I believe. But that's part of the mythology. Anybody who's had any encounter has never described an animal that was aggressive in any way. Because there's a reason why it survived this long, and that's because it stayed out of the way.
But it can't be the same creature that was spotted back in 565 A.D.
Obviously. We're talking about a breeding species. Three have been seen at the same time by two different, three independent parties. There were a group of nine who watched three of them make their way up the loch, and on the other shore was a couple who saw the same thing, and another individual apart from that couple, and all three parties reported it to the newspaper, and were able to corroborate it. And at that time, a loud noise, somebody yelling, "Look, there it is," caused the animals to submerge.
Jeez. Well, maybe one day. Are there new expeditions planned with high scientific equipment?
Not really. I wish I could say that there was more money and resources for solving the great mysteries in life than there are for more colorful inks for packages of potato chips or research for more effective deodorants.
Yeah, but really.
It's hard to convince somebody how they're going to make money by funding research at Loch Ness. And
there's a great TV show there.
Let's go, George.
Yeah, there really is.
Oh, there's an extraordinary TV show. And now we have the technology. I mean, the technology existed for a while, but it hasn't been that long since it's been declassified, where you have what's called digital sonar, and you can stake out every square inch of that loch. And there are other lochs that are easier to investigate, like Loch Maror, where the animals have also been seen. Unfortunately, we don't have that planned.
Why did the sightings seem to increase since the 30s, some 70 years ago?
Well, they increased, as I say, with the increased access to the loch. People were suddenly driving along the loch. Not that
there were more of them popping up.
It's hard to tell. These animals may have modified their behavior also. They're seen in two places. They're seen around the villages, which is either because that's where the rivers are, that's where the salmon congregates, and that's where they feed, or it's because that's where the people are who are going to report it. They're also seen in areas of the loch, and nobody was able to figure out a pattern why they were seen where they were seen, until some sophisticated sonar surveys were done, which indicated that the loch is actually two large basins. And where the bottom was sloping to the surface was where these animals were seen. So maybe they were bottom feeders and just kind of lost their way as they came to the surface. Of course, with their very long neck, they could come within inches of the surface, perhaps these appendages of breathing tubes, and we wouldn't see anything other than just a small disturbance, which you would take for birds or really, you wouldn't see at all. Again, it's a very, very large body of water. Now, supposedly, they were seen a lot more frequently in the 30s, and some of those early expeditions, the mountain expeditions, there was a guy, Sir Edward Mountain, who formed one of the early ones, who claimed that they were seeing this thing with great frequency. However, people didn't have video cameras back then, and now that we do, your listeners can go. There are websites that have cameras stationed along the periphery of the loch now, and they can see if they can see anything through the remote access of the internet.
With all these other theories out there, there are some who believe that the Loch Ness Monster could be some kind of supernatural creature.
Well, that's what I was telling you about Ted Holliday, who wrote this book, The Great Orm of Loch Ness. Ted came to believe that this thing was associated with the supernatural. And there's a lot of supernatural going on up there.
What would it be if it were a supernatural creature? I mean, a dimensional one or something? A creature
Your
ghost?
Your guess is as good as mine. That's what's been suggested. People have also suggested, and again, Holliday had some notion that it was somehow associated with evil. Baleskin House, your listeners, I'm sure, know that this was the first place where Aleister Crowley raised demons, was on Loch Ness. Mr. Holliday in 1973 brought up The Official Exorcist. I'm sure you're reassured to know that the Anglican Church has an official exorcist, but he brought up a guy by the name of Reverend Orman to exorcise the loch. And there was, as a result, a great deal, apparently, of supernatural phenomena going on. I had come weeks after I had heard stories of the Reverend exercising the loch and going over to the a small croft home on the shores of Loch Ness, right by Urquhart Castle, of a wing commander and Mrs. Carey. And they're sitting and talking about this thing, and they suddenly hear three great explosions and look out the window and see this swirling dark cloud. And a beam of pure white light goes from the cloud to Wing Commander Carey's forehead. And all of them see it except for Wing Commander Carey. Reverend Orman says, okay, here's what we have to do. We have to, you know, take water and put the signs of the cross on our forehead. And for a while, people were seeing this swirling black cloud.
Didn't you end up in Crowley's bedroom?
Yes.
Indirectly?
I got involved with, you know, like I say, there were all sorts of things going on at Loch Ness. People were seeing, for instance, corpse lights, which were when somebody died. They would bring the body to the cemetery after the funeral, and a ball of light would be seen rising from the grave. And people talked about this like, you know, what do you mean you don't know about that? Same thing with ball lightning. There was a family I knew that described having guests over, and a ball of lightning came through the window, bounced around the room, knocked something off the mantle, bounced around a little bit more. Everybody is, and then bounces out the window it came from. Everybody sits there kind of with their mouths open, and one person says, "Oh, I see you have one of those also." There was a little girl, often ghost. A little girl often seen in the home of the Careys. I never saw it. I spent time in that house. But I did go to Boleskine House, and I was warned about going to Boleskine House.
Why did you go? Curious?
I was very curious. Yeah, there was a writer who had come over to write about a Japanese expedition I was actually involved with at Loch Ness. And I said to him, "Listen, if you think this is weird, you should get a load of some of the other stuff going on here at Loch Ness." Our adventures were the first chapter of a book that Dan Greenberg wrote called Something's There. And it describes going to Boleskine House. And keep in mind, people drove tens of kilometers out of their way to avoid going by Boleskine House. Let me explain. Boleskine House was the perfect place. Aleister Crowley was a turn-of-the-century guy who he was a mountaineer, a poet, came to be known as the wickedest man in England. He was a magician. He fostered that reputation, some say because he wanted only true believers to get through. And if anybody was going to be dissuaded by the nonsense, so much the better. But he was instrumental in a group called the OTO, which was a London-based occult organization, and a number of other occult groups. And he wanted to perform a rite called the Sacred Rite of Abram Malin, which culminated after 9 months in raising demons. And it required a house with a northern exposure where he could put river sand. And he found Boleskine House, and he thought this was the perfect place for it. So he built his temple. He was actually in the middle of performing this and had raised demons. And when he was called back resolve a division in the OTO, and supposedly the demons had gotten loose and out of his control. And indeed, there are stories where, you know, he scribbled some magical notation on the back of a butcher's receipt, and that day the butcher cut his arm off. So people were terrified about it with Aleister Crowley. And I had heard that there was something going on there, and I went by, and indeed, at that point, the house was owned by Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin. And he had brought over somebody from Samuel Weiser's occult bookstore in New York City to rebuild Crowley's temple. And I got involved with rebuilding the temple. And this gentleman said, "You want to see demons?" We said, "Yeah, we'd like to see demons." And he handed us a book called The Goetia, which was subtitled Lesser Key of King Solomon, and it outlines 72 demons and what what each demon can do for you, and some can help you find buried treasure, and some can help you speak better. Some can make men fall in love with women. Women fall in love with men. And we thought, well, that's pretty interesting.
Well, maybe it's a combination of everything then, Lee. Maybe the Loch Ness Monster is indeed a physical creature, but it's got all these other strange things going on out there that are real as well.
I don't know how to operate thinking that it's a supernatural creature. However,
neither do I.
Yeah. But people are seeing something. It's certainly difficult to photograph. There are sonar contacts with it. Whatever is in Loch Ness remains in Loch Ness. There, people have explored the possibility of underwater passages to the sea, and that doesn't seem to be the case. Loch Ness is 51 feet above sea level. I wish I had an answer. All I can say is people are seeing something. Something's there.
And they're still seeing it.
They're still seeing it, and they're still getting crummy photos of it. There was recently, a guy who got a video of it, and I've seen the video, and I would see things like that all the time.
Isn't it amazing with digital cameras now that we still can't get a good picture of this thing?
Yes, it is amazing, and I'm kind of surprised why that is, but that seemed to be the case with it. I was on Loch Ness for 4 months at a clip, just staring out into the loch with my Bolex camera, hoping to see something. I didn't have any luck. We were out at night, trying to photograph at night. We had all sorts of attractants. We were flashing lights underwater, thinking maybe it was reptilian.
Did it ever make a sound? Did people ever say it makes some kind of a sound, a scream, anything like that?
No. Nothing. No report of a sound. No.
Not like we're going to talk about next hour. Bigfoot. He makes sounds.
Bigfoot makes
a lot of sounds.
And I can tell you I've heard them.
So what does your gut tell you? What do you think it is?
With Loch Ness?
Loch Ness, yeah.
Man, I am confused. Like I said, I was very involved in this research in the heyday of the research there, and it really looked like we were on the verge of a major discovery, and I felt like evidence was mounting up. And over the years, rather than accumulate more evidence, we've kind of poked holes in the evidence that we had. Still left with these sightings that you just cannot ignore. What does my gut tell me? I don't know. I mean, I'm as confused as Ted Holliday. I don't know.
All right. Stay with us, Lee Frank, as we talk about Bigfoot next with you on Coast to Coast AM.